September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Our guest today will help us understand that there's hope and there's resources available for those who are struggling. He leads the research arm of one of the largest networks of mental health care clinics for veterans, service members, and their families in the world. This is a conversation you won't want to miss.
Welcome to Your Next Mission, the nation's number one video podcast on military transition and leadership. We tell the stories of those who served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition and financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now, here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us. Before we get started, though, I'd like to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USA, where we take care of our own. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, together they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families. I say this every week. We love them, too. Now I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Dr. David Link, director of the Cohen Veterans Network Institute for Quality, or CVNIQ, and a retired colonel, U.S. Air Force, who has been a licensed clinician for over 30 years, and 26 which were spent in uniform. Dr. Link, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Major, for having me on the podcast. I truly appreciate your commitment to the military and veteran community and the impact you have. So thanks again. This is an extraordinary opportunity. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Before we get started here a little bit, sir, would you tell the audience take a minute or so, tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I think you already hit the high points. I am an LCSW, a social worker by trade. I've been a clinician or therapist for over 30 years. I had a 26-year Air Force career from which I retired in 2021 at the rank of colonel, retired out of Langley Air Force Base right in Virginia, where I currently reside, in Northern Virginia these days. Ran family advocacy programs in my early career, mental health programs, subsequently held staff and command roles across Air Force. I've often said I've held every mental health job in the Air Force. I don't think that's entirely true. But I did do a stint as the Air Force Suicide Prevention Program Manager. It was an honor to hold that role and to advise the Surgeon General of the Air Force and the senior leadership. Joined Cohen Veterans Network in 2021 as the inaugural director of the Institute for Quality. And this is an institute that was envisioned by Dr. Anthony Hassan, our CEO, also an Air Force veteran, by the way, to make CVN a continuously learning and developing mental health network, you know, to strive for excellence in everything we did. So I found the job so compelling upon retirement from the Air Force, there was no other job that I wanted to do. So I was very fortunate to get my dream job upon retirement. I've been married for 32 years, two kids, proud of my military family. We PCS'd probably 11 times. I think I PCS'd 11 times. They PCS'd probably 9. You know how that goes toward the end of career, especially. And again, we settled in Northern Virginia. So that's me in a nutshell.
I usually tell people, there you go. Well, I usually tell people I served like 36 years in the service, so I spent a long time in the Army. So I usually say anybody less than me, quitter. But sir, it sounds like you did a heck of a good job. So thank you for all you do and continue to do. Hey, for our listeners who may not be familiar with the Cohen Veteran Network, would you tell us about them?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be delighted to tell you more about CVN or Cohen Veterans Network. We are a global nonprofit mental health network. We operate clinics primarily for post 9/11 veterans, active duty service members, and their family members. We have 23 Cohen clinics serving 22 states and the District of Columbia. We're in the process of opening 5 clinics in Asia, specifically on U.S. military installations to support military families and service members. Care is delivered in person or via telehealth, so we have a lot of flexibility. We do in-person mental health care at all of our clinics. Also offer telehealth, you know, where we can cover the whole state, sometimes even reach across state lines. And we do hybrid, which you don't hear a whole lot about. You hear about, you know, in person, you hear about telehealth. But of course, hybrid means you can do a little bit of both. You know, and people need that flexibility the way folks live now. Life is complicated. So if you're being seen in person and you have a childcare issue or something, you can do a telehealth session. Conversely, if you're being seen by telehealth and you really want to see somebody eyeball to eyeball, you can, you know, so you can kind of switch back and forth. You know, ability to pay is never an impediment at CBN. We're here to serve veterans, military members, and their families. And we treat all of the common mental health disorders. We are an outpatient, we offer outpatient services, but we treat depression, anxiety, PTSD, grief, family issues, military transition, adjustment. And it's important to emphasize that we treat not only adults, but children and adolescents, you know, including, and we do families and we do couples and we do groups. So really the full complement of services that folks could benefit from.
Yeah, I was told one time, even if I go to your clinic and I have a good friend that I'm associated with, you'll even allow that friend to come in or be involved in that process too?
Well, I think that's an important point, Sergeant Major. Thanks for bringing it up. We do. Our definition of family is quite inclusive. So we're not looking to sort of exclude, identify who's not a family member. If you tell us this person's family to you, if they're an adult family member, if they're even a parent, if they're a sibling, particularly if they've been impacted by your service, yeah, chances are we're going to get them in and take care of them as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of times it may be somebody that's real close to them, and maybe his wife has passed away or something like that, or spouse has passed away. Hey, you lead the CVNIQ. What is it, and what role does it play within the network?
Sure. So the Institute for Quality is all about research and innovation. So essentially, I'm a research director, but again, I have a lot of clinical experience that I bring to the role because we are a clinical network. And it was stood up to ensure that CBN remains a continuously learning network where research feeds back into everything we do. It makes us better, and it allows us to also, you know, it informs our practice. It promotes excellence in, you know, using the best evidence-based care we can provide. And it also helps us to advance the field. So we can share some of these insights and the things that we're learning every day in the work that we do with folks across the mental health field, other MSOs, military and veteran service organizations. We focus typically on mental health. We focus on access. We focus on outcomes. We're very interested in mental health benchmarks, right? What's expectable? What's achievable? How do we compare across the field? And this has been a challenging issue that we recently published a study on and a call to action. We prioritize brief, focused, evidence-based care. Protocols that fit into how people live and work these days, as I said, you know, so we have telehealth, in-person, and kind of hybrid models. And we make sure our research is being disseminated and shared across the field. We recently started publishing these data insights that we're firing out on email, we're posting on our website. You know, we've published in the last 5 years about 20 peer-reviewed research articles, which is great. But that only reaches a limited audience, and it doesn't reach most of the veterans and military members, policymakers, et cetera. So these data insights give us an additional opportunity to reach a wider audience, and you'll find them on our website. I encourage folks, CBN, Cohen Veterans Network, and specifically Cohen Veterans Network Institute for Quality. You can find all sorts of good resources.
Oh, thanks a lot, sir. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, since this is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, I want to talk about suicide prevention research work at CVNIQ. It's doing around the lethal means safety. So please stay right there. We'll be right back. This is Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. If you're enjoying this discussion, and I know you are because we're talking about taking care of our veterans and families, please click on that subscribe button below. Be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after word from our presenting sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. And USAA.
A century ago, our founders made a promise to always take care of their own. That promise is still at the heart of everything we do and why our members know we'll do what's right. Because at USAA, we take care of our own.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. David Link, director of the Cohen Veterans Network Institute for Quality, CVNIQ. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support the work we're doing on behalf of our veterans and family here at the American Freedom Foundation. If you have a used vehicle you're planning on getting rid of, or some property you don't have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on that vehicle donation button or that home donation button to support our work. We really appreciate your support. Sir, September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Based on your experience and research, what do you think everybody needs to know about this important topic?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's important to reassure people and encourage people that, you know, suicide is preventable. You know, we know some of the right things to do. We have lots of good folks engaged. And, you know, from the national level to the local level, we are continuing to attack this problem. I think there's also a couple of different levels. You know, me as a mental health provider and research director, we're more focused on clinical suicide risk management. Obviously, we're helping the folks come through the door and trying to encourage folks to seek our care. But then there's another layer to that that's more of sort of the public health level, which are what are the things that we can do, you know, from the VA to DOD to, you know, nonprofits across the spectrum to reduce population risk across populations, whether it's the U.S. national population and or specifically the military and veteran population. I think there are some things that have been dramatically made dramatic contribution recently. So things like 988, you know, the crisis line. So here's an option for folks to seek care. Things, for instance, one of the things that we know works very well is you've got to address lethal means, right? Lethal means, particularly things like firearms and medications. How do you help to manage them? How do you provide counseling around those? You know, those risks, especially for folks who are in crisis. So doing those kinds of things and just mobilizing resources. You know, we have partners in the field who are doing an amazing job. Folks like the Face the Fight Coalition, have to give them a shout out, you know, 300 members and relentlessly attacking this problem because it is a wicked problem. As I think it's Craig Bryan, who's a noted suicide researcher, has pointed out, this is a very complex problem, and it's not just one thing that will solve it. You know, so it requires a concerted effort, but I think there's a lot of good work being done out there. So I'm encouraged by that.
Yeah. So I think when I was talking before, I told you I'd suffered from post-traumatic stress for a long time, but I know that you're currently working on a project with legal means, which you just talked about just a minute ago. Would you tell us, you know, a little bit more about that lethal means issues that you have there?
Sure, absolutely. So a restriction of access to lethal means is something that's been kind of a principle in suicide prevention for decades. You know, things, everything from, you know, erecting bridge barriers to firearm safe storage. So the specific context for our study was it was around women veterans and firearm safe storage. One of the concerns that we've had around women veterans in recent years is that may have not gotten sufficient attention is that their rates have been rising even more steeply than among male veterans. And their use of firearms has increased dramatically. It's now the number one means of death by suicide for veteran women. So what we set out to do was actually a gap analysis to identify, and then a systematic review, which is a fancy thing where we take every study that we can find for the last 20 years. What do we know about this topic? And we took a hard look at that. We looked at over, 3,600 peer-reviewed publications. And when we whittled that down to the ones that were really relevant, there was a minimal amount of work in this area. There were about 7 studies, and there were about 7 national experts that we actually interviewed. We reached out to each and every one of them, and we interviewed to try to gather together what is it that we understand about this, and how can we kind of bend that curve? And we found some important things. Women's perspectives are different. The things that put them at risk may be different. Women veterans do own firearms. They're comfortable with firearms. They're weapons bearers. They're trained in the military to use firearms. But what kind of messaging is going to be effective with them? And what are the kinds of things that put them at risk? One of the things we noted was women veterans, if you just ask the typical question that we ask in, say, an intake for mental health is, do you own any firearms? So many of our women veterans might say, well, no, I don't. But that didn't mean they didn't have access to them. So there may be firearms in the household that are not owned by the women veteran, but by the partner. So, and this is more of an issue for women veterans than for our male veterans. There are significant levels of firearm ownership among women veterans. It's about 25% nationally, maybe somewhat higher in our clinical population. But, you have to ask the right question. So as we were learning some of these lessons, we also put a training together for clinicians. So all of these clinicians who are sitting down with women veterans and military members who are trying to help them manage suicide risk in crisis, were able to learn from some of the lessons we were learning. We also learned that women veterans sometimes maintain firearms and keep them close at hand because of feeling vulnerable because of prior experiences of trauma, including things like military sexual trauma and other forms of interpersonal violence. So, the way to balance that and to be able to counsel women about, both treating their trauma, addressing that, and validating their concerns, while also helping to keep them safe if they're at an elevated suicide risk level. So these were critical things, and these were some lessons that really had never been, codified and put into trainings and offered widely to clinicians. So we were able to offer that to over 1,000 clinicians who are working with this population. So we had broad impact from that study.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. Years ago, they put, I'm just talking about the Army side, and they put all women in combat arms and everything else. So I would imagine they have the same kind of issues that any man would have, especially in combat. So that doesn't surprise me a bit.
What I was going to say was women do have all of the same issues that some of their male counterparts have, but they're also more nuanced. So there are additional things. So probably we want to apply all the lessons that we've learned about firearm safe storage for veterans in general, but also apply the additional level, which is essentially what we did in the training. We said all of these things still matter, but there's these other 5 things that we haven't really fully developed and considered yet related to women veterans that we also need to incorporate to be fully successful. So
we need to take another quick break. When I come back, I want to talk about how social factors impact the mental health of veterans and military families. So stay right there. We'll be right back. Now, here's a word from one more of the organizations that help make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Quality insurance will set you up for the rest of your life. And I think that's what Blue Cross and Blue Shield has demonstrated for decades.
It adds to your longevity of life because we want to be there for our loved ones. We want to be there for our family.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed here today with Dr. David Link, director of the Cohen Veterans Network Institute for Quality, CVN-IQ. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please let me know what you'd like us to cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. You, sir, you've explored how social factors impact the mental health of veterans and families. What stood out to you from that work?
Sure, we absolutely have. And this is work we did in conjunction with our Face the Fight partners. And one of the things we were looking specifically at was how the social determinants of health, and they're sometimes called social drivers of health, impact suicide risk level. So the social determinants of health, in addition to kind of the mental challenges that folks face, are the circumstances and the conditions in which people live and work. Things like everything from legal challenges to unemployment or underemployment, challenges with socioeconomic status, housing, you know, these are the kinds of conditions that also matter. And what we found was folks with housing insecurity and or unemployment could be at double the suicide risk level. So when we looked at suicide risk levels, if you have these social determinants in addition to, regardless of mental health symptoms, if you had these additional challenges and stressors, you were going to tend to be a much higher risk. And that's critical. You know, one of the things we have in our Cohen Veterans Clinics, each of our clinics, we have a case manager. So case management is specifically there to address those issues, to make referrals, to sit down, to actually help individuals manage those, because it's not just about what you're thinking and feeling, but it's about the circumstances of your life. And when you're facing those kind of challenges, they're going to make it more difficult. They're going to impact your mental health outcomes, because it's very tough to treat anxiety when somebody's worried that they're about to be evicted. You know, you can imagine. And so it impacts both your mental health outcomes, your likelihood of dropping out, especially if you're, you know, challenged with transportation, challenged with childcare, et cetera. So it's a critical service that we provide in all of our clinics to have case management. Well, while I'm touching on the topic of childcare, we do have Child Watch available at our CVN clinics and transportation assistance if needed. So again, we try to address all of the potential barriers to mental health care that can impact our veterans and military members.
When you think about the field of behavioral health and veterans, what keeps you up at night?
What is it that Secretary Mattis said about that? He said, when asked by a reporter, he said, "Nothing keeps me up at night. I keep other people up at night." Of course, he's a Marine, so that's not really the case for me. As a research director, I don't actually keep anyone up at night. And I'll take this opportunity to say that we do many sleep consults. Treating insomnia is one of the things, you know, it often is comorbid with things like PTSD and depression, anxiety, all of the major mental disorders sometimes have a sleep disturbance component. So again, we're very comfortable treating insomnia. I think the thing that keeps me up the most, aside from I'm concerned about suicide rates all the time, you know, given how they've been rising over the last two decades, and this is a national problem, but it's also even more acutely felt for our veterans and military members. So this is something that we focus our work on all the time. And it's something that I'm constantly thinking about. How can we reduce that? How can we be more effective at managing it in our population? But I think the other thing, aside from the folks that are struggling the most, who have what we call SMI, serious mental illness, who are facing homelessness, I mean, there are certainly some of our veterans that are really struggling. And, you know, we need to maintain and improve services to them. But there are also significant numbers, probably 10 times as many, 20 times as many, who are living their lives day to day, who have separated from service or retired from service, who are struggling with symptoms and who feel like this is just as good as life gets and that they have to accept it. And these are folks that I run into all the time. And it's folks that we see in our clinic as well. I would like to arrive at a day where there are no veterans or military members who are walking around saying, you know, maybe this is as good as I need to feel. I think if they're experiencing residual symptoms, depression, anxiety, PTSD, especially if it's a result of their military service, I want to offer them hope that, you know, you don't have to accept this. And, you know, there is help available and it's highly effective. One of the most toxic messages I think that I've heard is that, you know, veterans' issues are untreatable, even PTSD, that it's untreatable. Absolutely not the case. You know, I'm a trained therapist myself. I have used all of the major sort of the gold standard trauma therapies. In my own experience, I have found them to be highly effective with folks who had PTSD diagnoses, who really struggled with these issues very severely at times. So I think the main thing I would say to people is seek help and don't give up. Don't give up on feeling better. Don't give up on getting back to a point where you have the quality of life. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your family. I can't imagine somebody, if they went to a doctor 10 years ago, would say, well, I tried medical care and it didn't work for me. But I hear this about mental health care all the time. Yeah, I did therapy, but it didn't really work for me. Or I did therapy, but I didn't really like it. You know, and typically that might be that they sat down with the therapist for 30 minutes or something once upon a time. And I get it. You know, it's hard. There's stigma involved. And it can be difficult to walk through that door. And some people have had, you know, there's a range of experiences people have. But again, we have high military cultural competence. We know how to treat military members. We know the types of issues they present with. And I would encourage anybody who's struggling out there, struggling in silence and just kind of tolerating the symptoms that they may have, to come and give it a try. And, if they've tried before. Thanks for giving me that soapbox, and I apologize for rambling on.
Yeah, you know, it's a good idea. No. You didn't ramble on it. I was going to say about myself, you know, I got out, went to Vietnam in 67 to 68. So I've suffered from PTSD for a long, long time. And even when I got out of the service, they just really, you know, coming back from Vietnam, there wasn't anything there. So it's gotten a lot better, and it certainly will get a lot better. So on the other side of that, though, what makes you hopeful? And I think you just talked about it already. What makes you hopeful about what you're currently doing? And I think you're improving every day and making things better every day for our veteran community and our families.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful. I'm optimistic based on all the things that we're doing right, because we know some of the things that matter the most. We know that we have to treat mental health. We know that we have to decrease barriers. We need to decrease stigma. We need to get folks in for care. We need to provide access. We know we need to treat alcohol use disorders and substance use disorders, which can be comorbid. They co-occur with things like PTSD, and sometimes people use them for what we call self-medication, right, to try to manage those symptoms themselves, which usually doesn't turn out well. We need to continue to promote, and I think we're making progress in promoting supportive environments, including support during military transition, because we know during the military to CIV transition, even for folks who may not be combat exposed, there is an increase in suicide risk in that first 12 months and 18 months, and believe it or not, is persistent according to some of the literature for up to 7 years. So just to put that in perspective, I retired five years ago. That would mean I'm still at elevated risk compared to my civilian counterpart. So it's something to really get our head around. I think we need to focus on addressing loneliness. And there's an epidemic of loneliness across the U.S. And we've done some surveying on veterans, that veterans struggle even more with loneliness. We have vets in rural situations where they don't have a lot of folks around. They don't always have the social support. And, you know, frankly, if you move around for 20 years or 30 years, you lose a certain amount of social support. So it's not surprising. But I'm very encouraged by the fact that we know many of the right things to do. And as I said before, we have folks who are working in this space, Face the Fight Coalition, Wounded Warrior, Stop Soldier Suicide. And, you know, honestly, our veteran counterparts, folks who are working for the Veterans Health Administration, places like the MIREC, they are studying suicide. They are working on, you know, so, you know, we work in concert and in partnership with them. The Defense Suicide Prevention Office, when I was the Air Force Suicide Prevention Program Manager, worked very closely with DSPO, the Defense Suicide Prevention Office. There are good people there working on these issues every day. So it really is this kind of research and this kind of programming is a team sport. And we just need to keep after it together, and we need to share information and work hard together.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. One of the things I say before we ask the last question here is that We probably ought to start talking to people about war, about what could happen to you in war before you ever go to war. Because what we do, we try to fix it at the backside, and we're doing a good job, I understand that. But if we talked about what you could go through before you ever get there, it might be a little bit easier for people to open up and talk about what their issues are and talk about, you know, whatever concerns or whatever problems they have. Hey, first of all, sir, this has been a great discussion. Do you have any final thoughts, something you want to share with the audience? Maybe you haven't said already, something you want to share with us?
Yeah, I think I'd probably wrap up with the, I think things that are most important. Care seeking is very important. I think we need to value our vets. We need to honor our vets. We need to take good care of them. That's what, you know, Cohen Veterans Network is all about. We want to continue to expand and meet the need. There are always gaps. So, you know, again, expanding into Asia, because, you know, we've gotten, you know, every time I would go out and give briefings to military spouses, I'd get the same feedback. You know, we need help for our families overseas. So we're attempting to fill that gap. And, and this is what we need to continue to do moving forward. Keep doing the things we're doing well, increase those, identify the gaps, aggressively identify the gaps, because that's where we're failing or we're falling short. And again, work together as a team. We can't afford to be competing, undermining one another. We work together. We work as, you know, among the VSOs and MSOs, we're kind of we work in partnership with broad coalitions, you know, to take care of these issues for our valued military and veteran communities.
Well, I've seen firsthand what you do, and you're doing a tremendous job. And I just want to, once again, thank you guys for what you're doing. And Dr. Lang, thanks again for just being with us today and coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Sergeant Major. It's been an extraordinary opportunity. It's been an honor and a privilege to have a conversation with you and to reach your audience. Thanks again.
Thank you. God bless. Thanks again to Dr. David Link for being with us. Again, this is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. If you or someone you love is struggling, please reach out to the Cohen Veteran Network or call 988 Suicide Crisis Lifeline. Remember, you're not alone. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast, and thank you for joining us. Log on to our website at yournextmission.org and check out our job board in partnership with Recruit Military and Opline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. You can follow me on my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And if you like what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave a message at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Dr. Link for joining us today. And I'd simply say, first of all, Veterans Cohen Network does a tremendous job, and they want to help veterans and their families and their friends and everybody around them every day. They're doing God's work as far as I'm concerned. And I also want to tell you that you're not alone. You know, I talk about it all the time. I've struggled for a lot of years, and I'm probably one of those guys that think there's probably not anybody that can help me. I'm sort of help myself, and I feel okay, and I enjoy life every day. But just don't think that you're alone. If you got a problem, ask somebody. If you're concerned about something, ask somebody. You know, I say it all the time, we're part of a family, and a lot of us struggle, but you're not alone. You'll never be alone. And that's why it's important to tell people your story. Tell people exactly what's going on with you. You know, it breaks my heart when I hear a veteran has taken their life by suicide, especially because I've had so many of my friends that have taken their life by suicide. So thanks for watching. And again, thanks to Bug Along Studios, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.